This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents After Ever Happy by Anna Todd. Read by Elizabeth Louise and Shane East.
Prologue. Harden. Many times in my life I felt unwanted, out of place in the worst way. I had a mum who tried. She really, honestly tried. But it just wasn't enough. She worked too much. She slept during the days because she was on her feet all night. Trish tried, but a boy, especially a lost boy, needs his father. I knew Ken Scott was a troubled man, an unpolished wannabe man who was never pleased or impressed by anything I did. The little Harden, who was pathetic in the way he tried to impress the tall man who shouts and stumbles filled the cramped space of our shitty house, would be pleased at the possibility that the cold man isn't his father. He would sigh, grab his book from the table, and ask his mum when Christian, the nice man who made him laugh by reciting passages from old books, was coming over. But Harden Scott, the adult man struggling with addiction and anger passed down by the shitty excuse for a father he was given, is fucking livid. I feel betrayed, confused as fucking hell, and fucking angry. It makes no sense. The cheesy plot of the switched fathers that every shitty sitcom uses couldn't possibly be my life. Buried memories resurface. My mum, on the phone the morning after one of my essays was chosen for the local paper.
I just thought you would want to know. Harden is brilliant, like his father, she softly praised into the line.
I looked around the small living room. The man with the dark hair, passed out on the chair with a bottle of brown liquor at his feet, wasn't brilliant.
He's a fucking mess,
I thought as he stirred in the chair, and my mum quickly hung up the phone. There were numerous times like this, too many to count, that I was too stupid, too young, to understand why Ken Scott was so distant with me, why he never hugged me the way my friends' dads would their sons. He never played baseball with me or taught me anything except how to be a fucking drunk. Was all of that a waste? Is Christian Vance actually my father? The room is spinning, and I stare at him, the man who supposedly fathered me. And I see something familiar in his green eyes, the line of his jaw. His hands are shaking as he pushes his hair back from his forehead, and I freeze, realizing that I'm doing the exact same thing.
Chapter 1. Tessa. That's impossible. I stand, but quickly sit back down on the bench when the grass underneath me seems to sway unsteadily. The park is filling with people now. Families with small children, balloons, and presents in their arms, despite the cold weather. It's true. Harden is Christian's son, Kimberly says, her blue eyes bright and focused. But Ken, Harden looks just like him. I remember the first time I met Ken Scott inside a yogurt shop. I immediately knew he was Harden's father. His dark hair and his height brought me to the easy conclusion. Does he? I don't really see it, except the hair color. Harden has the same eyes as Christian, the same facial structure. Does he? I struggle to picture the three faces. Christian has dimples like Harden and the same eyes, but it just doesn't make sense. Ken Scott is Harden's father. He has to be. Christian looks so young compared to Ken. I know they're the same age, but Ken's alcoholism took its toll on his appearance. He's still a handsome man, but you can see where the liquor has aged him. I struggle for words and air. Kimberly looks at me apologetically. I know. I've wanted to tell you so bad. I hated keeping this from you, but it wasn't my place. She puts her hand on mine and squeezes gently. Christian assured me that as soon as Trish gave him permission, he would tell Harden. I take a deep breath. That's what Christian is doing? Telling Harden now? I stand up again and Kimberly's hand drops away. I have to go to him. He is going to... I can't even begin to fathom how Harden will react to the news, especially after finding Trish and Christian together last night. This will be too much for him. He is, Kim sighs. Trish hasn't agreed fully, but Christian said she was close enough and things were getting out of hand. As I pull out my phone, my only thought is that I can't believe Trish would hide this from Harden. I had thought more of her, much more as a mother, and now I feel as if I've never met the woman. My phone is already pressed to my cheek, Harden's line ringing in my ear when Kimberly says, I told Christian that he shouldn't separate you two when he told Harden, but Trish recommended that if he does it, he needed to do it alone. Kimberly's mouth presses into a hard line, and she looks around the park, then up at the sky. I reach the dull tone of the automated system on Harden's voicemail. I dial again while Kimberly sits silently, only to get his voicemail for the second time. I shove my phone into my back pocket and start wringing my hands. Can you take me to him, Kimberly? Please? Yes, of course. She jumps to her feet, calling for Smith. Watching the little kid walk toward us with what I can only call a cartoon butler stride, it occurs to me that Smith is Christian's son and Harden's brother. Harden has a little brother. And then I think about Landon. What does it mean for Landon and Harden? Will Harden want anything to do with him now that he doesn't have a real family tie to him? And Karen? What about sweet Karen and her baked goods? Ken? What about the man who tries so hard to make up for the terrible childhood of a boy who isn't his son? Does Ken know? My head is spinning, and I need to see Harden. I need to make sure that he knows I am here for him, and we'll figure this out together. I can't imagine how he feels right now. He must be so overwhelmed. Does Smith know? I ask. After a few beats of silence, Kimberly says, We thought he did because of the way he is with Harden, but he couldn't possibly. I feel for Kimberly. She already had to deal with her fiancé's infidelity, and now this. When Smith gets to us, he stops and gives us a mysterious look, as if knowing exactly what we've been talking about. That's not possible, but the way he leaves ahead of us and goes to the car without saying a word, it does make me wonder. As we drive through Hampstead to find Harden and his father, the panic in my chest rises and falls, rises and falls.
Chapter 2. Harden. The crack of snapping wood sounds throughout the bar.
Harden, stop!
Vance's voice echoes through the space, from somewhere. Another snap, followed by the sound of breaking glass. The sound pleases me, heightening my thirst for violence. I need to break things, to hurt something, even if it's an object. And I do. Screams erupt, breaking me out of my trance. I look down at my hands and find the splintered end of an expensive chair leg. I look up at the blank faces of the alarmed strangers, searching for one face, Tessa's. She isn't here, though, and in this moment of rage I can't decide if that's a good thing or not. She would be afraid. She would be worried for me, panicking in a rushed way and calling my name to drown out the gasps and shouts ringing in my ears. I drop the wood quickly as if it had burned my skin and feel arms around my shoulders.
Get him out of here before they call the police,
Mike says, his voice louder than I've ever heard it before.
Get the fuck off me!
I shrug away from Vance and glare at him through the red filling my vision.
You want to go to jail?
He shouts, only inches from my face. I want to shove him to the ground, wrap my hands around his neck. But a couple more women scream, making sure I don't go back down that black hole again. I look around the expensive bar, noting the shattered tumblers on the floor, the broken chair, the horrified expressions of patrons expecting to glide above this kind of carnage. It'll be only moments before their shock turns to anger over my disrupting their overpriced pursuit of happiness. Christian is by my side again as I storm past the hostess and outside.
"Get in my car and I'll explain everything to you,"
he huffs out. Worried that the cops really might be showing up any moment, I do what he says, but I'm not sure how to feel or what to say. Despite the confession, I can't wrap my mind around this. The impossibility of it all is ridiculous. I get in the passenger seat just as he hits the driver's side.
"You can't be my father. It's not possible. It doesn't make a bit of sense. None of it."
Looking at the expensive rental, I wonder if this means Tessa is stranded at that damn park where I dropped her off.
"Kimberly has a car, right?"
Vance looks at me incredulously.
"Yes, of course she does."
The low purr of the engine grows louder as he zips through traffic.
"I'm sorry that you found out this way.
Everything was coming together for a while,
but then it started to slip."
He sighs. I stay silent, knowing I will lose my shit if I open my mouth. My fingers dig into my legs. The slight pain keeps me calm.
"I'm going to explain it to you, but you have to keep an open mind, okay?"
He glances over at me, and I can see the pity in his eyes. "I won't be pitied."
"Don't fucking talk to me like a goddamn child,"
I snap. Vance looks at me, then back at the road.
"You know that I grew up with your dad, Ken. We were mates since I can remember."
"Actually, I didn't know that." I glare at him. Then I turn to watch the landscape zooming by.
"I don't know shit about anything, apparently."
"Well, it's true. We grew up almost as brothers."
"Then you fucked his wife?"
I say, interrupting his bedtime story.
"Look,"
he nearly growls. His hands are white-knuckled on the steering wheel.
"I'm trying to explain this to you, so please just let me speak."
He takes a deep breath to calm his own temper.
"To answer your question, it wasn't like that. Your mom and Ken began dating in high school when your mom moved to Hampstead. She was the most beautiful girl I had ever seen."
My stomach turns at the memory of Vance's mouth on hers.
"But Ken swept her off her feet immediately. They spent every moment of every day together, just like Max and Denise did. The five of us had formed a little clique, you could say."
Lost in the ridiculous memory, he sighs, and his voice becomes distant. "She was witty, smart, and head over heels for your dad. Fuck, I'm not going to be able to stop calling him that." He groans. His fingers tap on the steering wheel, as if to goad him on. "Ken was smart, quite brilliant, really. And when he got into university with a full scholarship and early admission, he became busy, too busy for her. He would spend hours upon hours at the school. It quickly became the four of us without him, and things between your mum and I, well, my feelings grew tremendously, and hers began." Vance takes a momentary break to switch lanes and turn the vent so more air comes in. The air is still heavy and thick, and my mind is a fucking whirlwind when he starts up again. "I always loved her. She knew that. But she loved him, and he was my best friend." Vance swallows. "As the days and nights went by, we became intimate. Not sexually at this point, but we were both giving in to our feelings and not holding back."
"Spare me the fucking details."
I clench my fists on my lap, forcing my mouth to close so he can finish.
"Okay, okay, yeah."
He stares out the windshield. "Well, one thing led to another, and we were having a full-blown affair at this point. Ken had no idea. Max and Denise suspected something, but neither of them spoke up. I begged your mom to leave him for neglecting her."
"I know it's fucked up,
but I loved her. His brows knit together. She was the only escape I had from my own self-destructive behaviors. I cared about Ken, but I couldn't see past my love for her. I never could see past it. He blows out a hard breath. And? I press after a few seconds of silence. Yes. Well, and so when she announced that she was pregnant, I thought we would run away together and that she would marry me instead of him. I promised her that if she chose me, I would quit fucking off and would be there for her. For you. I feel his eyes on me, but I refuse to look into them. Your mom felt I wasn't stable enough for her, and I sat there biting my tongue while she and your Ken announced that they were expecting, and that they would be married that same week. What the fuck? I look over at him, but he's clearly lost in the past as he stares at the road ahead. I wanted the best for her, and I couldn't drag her through the mud and ruin her reputation by telling Ken or anyone the truth of what happened between us. I kept telling myself that he had to know deep down that it wasn't his child growing inside of her. Your mum swore that he had not touched her in months. Vance's shoulders shake slightly as an evident chill runs through him. I stood there in my suit at their small wedding as his best man. I knew he would give her what I couldn't. I wasn't even planning to go to university. All I did with my time was pine after a married woman and memorize pages from old novels that would never become my life. I had no plan, no money, and she needed both of those things. He sighs, trying to escape the memory. Watching him, I'm surprised by what comes to mind and what I feel compelled to say. I form a fist, then relax, trying to resist. Then I form a fist again, and I don't recognize my voice as I ask. So basically my mum used you for her entertainment and tossed you aside because you had no money? Vance lets out a deep breath. No, she didn't use me. He glances in my direction. I know it seems that way, and it's such a fucked up situation. But she had to think of you and your future. I was a complete and utter fuck up. Complete rubbish. And I had nothing going for me. And now you have millions, I bitterly remark. How can he defend my mum after all this shit? What is wrong with him? But then something in me turns, and I think about my mother, losing two men who later turned out to be rich, while she toils away at her job, coming home to her sad little house. Vance nods. Yes. But there was no way to know how I would turn out. Ken had his shit together, and I didn't. Period. Until he started getting shit-faced every night. My anger starts building again. I feel as if I will never escape this anger, as the sharp sting of betrayal cuts through me. I spent my childhood with a fucking drunk while Vance was living the high life. That was another one of my fuck-ups. Says this man who I was so sure for so long that I knew, that I really knew. I went through a lot of shit after you were born, but I enrolled in university and loved your mum from afar. Until you were about 5 years old. It was your birthday, and we were all there for your party. You came running into the kitchen, yelling for your daddy. Vance's voice cracks, and I ball my fist tighter. You had a book clutched to your chest, and for a second, I forgot that you weren't talking about me. I slam my fist on the dashboard. Let me out of the car, I demand. I can't listen to this anymore. This is so fucked up. It's too much for me to comprehend at once. Vance ignores my outburst and keeps driving along this residential street. I lost it that day. I demanded that your mom tell Ken the truth. I was sick of watching you grow up, and by then I had already secured my plans to move to America. I begged her to come with me and to bring you, my son. My son. My stomach lurches. I should just jump out of the car, moving or not. I look out at the pleasant little houses we travel past, thinking I will take physical pain over this any day. But she refused and told me that she had some testing done and that you weren't my child after all. What? I reach up to rub my temples. I would crack the dashboard with my skull if I thought it would help. I look over at him and see him looking left and right quickly. Then I notice the speed we're travelling at and realise that he's running every stoplight and stop sign, trying to make sure I don't jump out. She panicked, I guess. I don't know. He eyes me. I knew she was lying. She admitted there were no tests many years later. But at the time, she was adamant. She told me to leave it alone and apologized for making me think you were mine. I focus on my fist. Flex, release. Flex, release. Another year went by, and we began speaking again. He starts, but something is off in his tone. You mean fucking again? Another hard exhale escapes his mouth. Yes. Every time we were near one another, we made the same mistake. Ken was working a lot, studying for his master's by that point, and she was home with you. You were always so much like me. Every time I came over, you had your face buried between pages. I don't know if you remember, but I would always bring books to you. I gave you my copy of The Great Gats. Stop! I cringe at the adoration in his voice, while distorted memories fog my mind. We kept this going on and off for years, and we thought everyone was oblivious. It was my fault. I could never stop loving her. No matter what I did, she haunted me. I moved closer to their house, directly across the street. Your father knew. I don't know how he knew, but it became clear that he did. After a pause and a turn down another street, Vance adds, he started drinking then. I sit up, slamming my palms against the dashboard. He doesn't even flinch. So you left me with an alcoholic father who was only an alcoholic because of you and my mum? The anger in my voice fills the car, but I can barely breathe. I tried to convince her, Harden. I don't want you blaming her, but I tried to tell her to bring you to live with me. But she wouldn't. His hands run over his hair and he tugs at the roots. His drinking became heavier and more frequent every week, but she still wouldn't admit that you were mine, not even to me. So I left. I had to leave. He stops talking, and when I look over at him, his eyes are blinking rapidly. I reach for the door handle, but he accelerates and presses the power locks several times in a row, the click, click, click seeming to echo around the car. Vance's voice is hollow when he starts talking again. I moved to America, and I didn't hear from your mum for years. Not until Ken finally left her. She had no money and was working herself to the bone. I had already started bringing in money. Not nearly as much as I have now, but enough to spare. I came back here and got a place for us, the three of us, and I took care of her in his absence. But she grew more and more distant from me. Ken sent divorce papers from wherever the hell he'd run off to, and still she didn't want anything permanent from me. Vance frowns. After all I did, I still wasn't enough. I remember his taking us in after my dad left, but I never thought too much into it. I had no idea that it was because he had a history with my mum, or that I could be his son. My already tattered view of my mum is completely shredded now. I've lost all respect for her. So when she moved back into that house, I still took care of both of you financially, but I went back to America. Your mum started returning my checks each month and wouldn't answer my calls. So I started to assume that she'd found someone else. She didn't. She just spent every hour of every day working. My teenage years were lonely at home. That's why I found company with the wrong crowd. I think she was waiting for him to come back, Vance says quickly, then pauses. But he never did. He stayed a drunk year after year, until something made him finally decide he had had enough. I didn't talk to him for years, until he contacted me when he moved to the States. He was sober, and I had just lost Rose. Rose was the first woman since your mom that I could look at and not see Trish's face. She was the sweetest woman, and she made me happy. I knew I would never love anyone as bright as I did your mom, but I was content with Rose. We were happy, and I was building a life with her. But I've been damned, and she grew sick. She gave birth to Smith, and I lost her. I gape at the thought. Smith. I've been too busy trying to put the fucked up pieces together to even think about the boy. What does this mean? Fuck. I thought of that little genius as my second chance to be a father. He made me whole again after his mother died. I was always reminded of you as a boy. He looks just like you did when you were young, only with lighter hair and eyes. I remember Tessa claiming the same thing after we met the kid, but I don't see it. This is fucked up, is all I can think to say. My phone vibrates in my pocket, but I just look at my leg, like it's some phantom sensation, and I can't seem to move myself to answer the call. I know it is, and I'm sorry. When you moved to America, I thought I would be able to be close with you without being a father figure. I stayed in contact with your mom, hired you on advance, and tried to grow as close to you as you would let me. I repaired my relationship with Ken, even though there will always be hostility. I think he pitied me after I lost my wife, and by that point he had changed so much. I only wanted to be close to you. I would take anything I could get. I know you hate me now, but I would like to think I accomplished that for a little while at least. You've been lying to me my entire life. I know. So have my mum and my... Ken. Your mum is still in denial, Vance says, another excuse for her. She will barely admit it even now. And as for Ken, he always had his suspicions, but your mum has never confirmed it. I believe that he still focuses on the slight chance that you are his son. I roll my eyes at the absurdity of what he said. You're telling me that Ken Scott is stupid enough to believe that I'm his child after all the years of you two fucking around behind his back? No. Stopping the car at the side of the road, he puts it in park and looks over at me, serious and intense. Ken is not stupid. He's hopeful. He loved you. He still loves you. And you are the only reason he stopped drinking and went back to finish his degree. Even though he knew the possibility was there, he still did all of that for you. He regrets all the hell he put you through and all the shit that happened to your mom. I flinch as the images haunting my nightmares flow behind my eyes, as I relive what those drunken soldiers did to her all those many years ago. There wasn't any testing done. How do you know you're even my father? I can't believe this question is being asked. I know it. You know it, too. Everyone always said how much you looked like Ken, but I know it's my blood that runs through your veins. The timeline doesn't add up for him to be your father. There is no way that she was pregnant by him. I focus on the trees outside, and my phone starts to buzz again. Why now? Why are you telling me this now? I ask, my voice rising, my barely existent patience evaporating. Because your mom has grown paranoid. Ken mentioned something to me 2 weeks ago, asking you to get some blood testing done to help Karen. And I brought it up to your mom. Testing for what? What does Karen have to do with any of this? Vance glances down at my leg, then at his own cell phone resting on the middle console. You should answer that. Kimberly is calling me as well. But I shake my head. I'll call Tessa as soon as I'm out of this car. I really am sorry for all of this. I don't know what the hell I was thinking, going to her house last night. She called me, and I just... I don't know. Kimberly is to be my wife. I love her more than anything, even more than I ever loved your mom. It's a different type of love. It's reciprocated, and she is everything to me. I made a huge mistake seeing your mom again, and I will spend my life making up for that. I won't be surprised if Kim leaves me. Oh, spare me the sad sack act. Yeah, Captain Obvious. You probably shouldn't have been trying to fuck my mum on the counter. He glares at me. She sounded panicked, and she said she wanted to make sure her past was in the past before her wedding. And I'm a poster boy for terrible decisions. He taps his fingers on the steering wheel, shame clear in his voice. So am I, I mumble to myself, and reach for the door handle. He reaches for my arm. Harden, don't! I pull my arm away and get out of the car. I need time to process all of this shit. I've just been bombarded with too many answers to questions I never even knew to ask. I need to breathe. I need to calm down. I need to get away from him and get to my girl, my salvation. I need you to get away from me. We both know that. I tell him when he doesn't move his car. He stares at me momentarily, then nods, leaving me on the street. I look around the street and notice a familiar storefront halfway down the block, meaning I'm only blocks from my mum's house. My blood is pounding behind my ears as I reach into my pocket to call Tess. I need to hear her voice. I need her to bring me back to reality. As I watch the building, waiting for her to answer, my demons battle inside me, pulling me into the comfortable darkness. The pull is stronger and deeper with each unanswered ring, and soon I find my feet carrying me across the street. Pushing my phone back into my pocket, I open the door and walk into the familiar scenery of my past.
Chapter 3. Tessa. Broken glass crunches under my feet as I shift side to side, waiting patiently, or as close to patiently as I can manage. At last, when Mike is done talking to the police, I go up to him. "Where is he?" I ask, and not nicely.
"He left with Christian Vance."
Mike's eyes are void of all emotion. His look makes me calm down a bit, recognize that this isn't his fault. This is his wedding day, and it's been ruined. I look around at the broken wood and ignore the whispers coming from the nosy onlookers. My stomach is in knots, and I try to hold myself together. Where did they go?
"I don't know."
He buries his head in his hands. Kimberly taps my shoulder. "Look, when the police are done with those guys, if we stick around, they might want to talk to you, too." I glance back and forth between the door and Mike. I nod, then follow Kimberly outside to prevent drawing any of the cops' attention to me. "Can you try Christian again? I'm sorry, I just need to talk to Harden. I shiver in the chill air." "I'll try again," she promises, and we walk across the parking lot to her rental car. A slow, sinking feeling sets in my stomach as I watch yet another police officer enter the swanky bar. I'm terrified for Harden, not because of the police, but because I'm afraid of how he will handle all this when he's alone with Christian. I see Smith sitting quietly in the back seat of the car and lean my elbows onto the trunk and close my eyes.
"What do you mean you don't know?"
Kimberly shouts, breaking me out of my thoughts.
"We'll find him," she snaps, and ends the call.
What's happening? My heart is pounding so loud that I'm afraid I won't hear her answer. Harden got out of the car and Christian lost track of him. She gathers her hair and pulls it into a ponytail. "It's almost time for that damn wedding," she says, looking toward the door of the bar where Mike stands alone.
This is a disaster, I groan, sending a silent prayer that Harden is on his way back here. I grab my phone again, and some of the panic decreases when I see his name on the missed call list. With shaking hands, I dial him back and wait. And wait. And get no answer. I call back again and again, only to get his voicemail each time.
Chapter 4. Harden.
Jack and Coke,
I bark. The bald bartender glares at me as he pulls an empty glass from the rack and fills it with ice. Too bad I didn't think to invite Vance. We could have shared a father-son drink.
Fuck, this is all so fucked up.
Double, actually.
I modify the order.
Got it,
the big man sarcastically responds. My eyes find the old television on the wall, and I read the captions on the bottom of the screen. The commercial is for an insurance company, and the screen is covered by a giggling baby. Why they choose to put babies in every damn commercial, I will never know. The bartender wordlessly slides my drink across the wooden bar, just as the baby makes a sound that's presumably supposed to be even more adorable than giggling. And I bring the glass to my lips, allowing my mind to take me far away from here.
Why did you bring home baby products?
I had asked. She sat down on the edge of the bathtub and pulled her hair into a ponytail. I started to worry if she had an obsession with children. It sure as hell seemed like it.
It's not a baby product,
Tessa had said and laughed.
It just has a baby and a father printed on the package.
I really don't understand the appeal there. I lifted the box of shaving products Tessa had brought home for me, examining the chubby cheeks of a baby and wondering what the hell a baby has to do with a shaving kit. She shrugged.
I don't really get it either, but I'm sure putting a baby's image on it will help with sales.
Maybe for women buying their boyfriend's or husband's shit, I corrected her. No man in his right mind would have grabbed that thing off the shelf.
No, I'm sure fathers would buy it too.
Sure. I had ripped open the box and laid the contents out in front of me, then made eye contact with her through the mirror. A bowl?
Yes, it's for the cream. You'll get a better shave if you use the brush.
And how do you know that? I raised a brow at her, hoping she didn't know this from experience with Noah. Her smile was wide.
I looked it up.
Of course you did. My jealousy disappeared, and she playfully kicked her feet at me. Since you seem to be an expert in the art of shaving, come help me. I had always just used a simple razor and cream, but since she had clearly put thought into this, I wouldn't deny her. And, frankly, the blooming idea of her shaving my face was a major fucking turn-on. Tessa smiled and got to her feet, joining me in front of the sink. She picked up the tube of cream and filled the bowl before swirling the brush around to create a lather.
Here,
she smiled, handing me the brush.
No,
you do it. I placed the brush back into her hand and wrapped my hands around her waist.
Up you go.
I lifted her onto the sink. Once she was settled, I pushed her thighs apart and stood between them. Her expression was cautious but concentrated as she dipped the brush into the lather and swiped it across my jaw.
I don't really want to go anywhere tonight, I told her. I have so much work to do.
You've been distracting me. Grabbing a handful of her tits, I squeezed gently. Her hand jerked, flinging some of the shaving cream onto my neck.
Good thing the razor wasn't in your hand,
I joked.
Good thing,
she mocked, and picked up the brand new razor. Then she chewed at her full lips and asked,
Are you sure you want me to do it? I'm nervous that I'll cut you by accident.
Stop worrying, I smirked. I'm sure you researched this part online anyway. Her tongue peeked out in a childish way, and I leaned forward to kiss her before she began. She didn't say anything, because I was right. But know that if you cut me, you should definitely run. I laughed. She scowled again.
Stay still, please.
Her hand was slightly shaky, but quickly grew steady as she gently dragged the razor across my jawline.
You should just go without me,
I said, and closed my eyes. Tessa's shaving my face was somehow comforting and surprisingly calming. I didn't feel like going to my father's house for dinner, but Tessa was going stir-crazy, being in the apartment all the time. So when Karen had called to invite us, she jumped at the request.
If we stay in tonight, then I want to reschedule and go this weekend. Will you have your work done by then?
I guess so, I complained.
You can call and tell them then. I'll start dinner after this, and you can work.
She tapped my top lip with her finger, signaling for me to tuck my lips in, and she carefully shaved around my mouth. When she was finished, I said, You should drink the rest of that wine in the fridge, because the cork has been off for days now. It's going to be vinegar soon.
I don't know.
She hesitated. I knew why. I opened my eyes, and she reached behind her back to turn the faucet on and wet a towel.
Tess.
I pressed my fingers under her chin.
You can drink in front of me. I'm not some struggling alcoholic. I know. But I don't want it to be weird for you. I don't really need to be drinking so much wine anyway. If you aren't drinking, I don't need to.
My problem isn't drinking. It's only when I'm pissed off and drink. That's when there's a problem.
I know.
She gulped. She did know. She dragged the warm towel across my face, wiping the excess shaving cream away.
I'm only an asshole when I drink to try to solve shit, and lately there hasn't been anything to solve, so I'm fine.
Even I knew that wasn't an ironclad guarantee. I don't want to be one of those geezers like my father who drink themselves stupid and endanger the people around me. And since you happen to be about the only person I give a fuck about, I don't want to drink around you anymore.
I love you,
she'd simply replied. And I love you. Breaking the oh-so-serious air of the moment, and because I didn't want to go down this road any further, I stared down at her body perched on the sink. She was wearing one of my white t-shirts, with nothing but black panties underneath. I may have to keep you around now that you can properly shave my face. You cook, you clean. She swatted at me and rolled her eyes.
And what do I get out of this deal? You are messy. You only help me cook once a week, if that. You are grumpy in the morning.
I cut her off by placing my hand between her legs and pushing her panties to the side.
I guess you are good at something.
She grinned as I slid one finger inside her.
Only one thing.
I added another. And she groaned, her head rolling back. The bartender's hand thumps against the counter in front of me.
I said, do you want another drink?
I blink a few times and look down at the bar, then up at him. Yeah. I hand the glass over, the memory fading as I wait for my refill. Another double. As the old, bald bastard heads down the bar, I hear a woman's voice say with surprise,
Harden? Harden Scott?
I turn my head to see the somewhat familiar face of Judy Welch, my mum's old friend. Well, ex-friend. Yeah, I nod, noticing that age hasn't been kind to her.
Holy hell! It's been, what, 6 years? 7? Are you here alone?
She puts her hand on my shoulder and lifts herself onto the bar stool next to me. Yeah, around that, and yes, I'm here alone. My mum won't be chasing after you. Judy has the unhappy face of a woman who's drunk way too much in her lifetime. Her hair is the same white blonde that it was when I was a teenager, and her implants look too large for her small frame. I remember the first time she touched me. I felt like a man, fucking my mum's friend. And now, looking at her, I wouldn't fuck her with the bald bartender's dick. She winks at me.
You have definitely grown up.
My drink is placed in front of me, and I gulp it down within seconds.
Talkative as ever.
She pats my shoulder again, calling out her drink order to the bartender. Then she turns to me.
Here to drown your sorrows? Love problems?
Neither. I roll my glass between my fingers, listening to the ice clink against the glass.
Well, I'm here to drown out a lot of both. So let's you and I have a shot,
Judy says with a smile I remember from deep in the past, and orders the two of us a round of cheap whiskey.
Chapter 5. Tessa. Kimberly curses Christian out so bad over the phone that afterwards she has to stop and catch her breath. She reaches a hand out to my shoulder. Hopefully Harden's just walking around to clear his head. Christian said he was giving him space. She groans in disapproval. But I know Harden, and I know that he doesn't just clear his head by walking around. I try to reach him again, but I'm immediately met with his voicemail. He has turned his phone off completely.
Do you think he would go to the wedding?
Kim looks at me.
You know, to cause a scene?
I want to tell her that he wouldn't do that, but with the weight of all this pressing on him, I can't deny it's a possibility.
I can't believe I'm even suggesting this,
Kimberly says delicately.
But maybe you should come to the wedding after all, at least to make sure he doesn't interrupt. Plus, it's likely that he's trying to find you anyway, and if nobody's on their phones, that's probably where he will look first.
The idea of Harden showing up to the church and causing a scene makes me nauseous. But selfishly, I hope that he does go there. Otherwise, I will have almost no chance of finding him. That he has turned his phone off makes me worry if he wants to be found. I guess so. Maybe I should go and just stay outside, out front, I suggest. Kimberly nods sympathetically, but her expression hardens when a sleek black BMW pulls into the lot, parking next to Kimberly's rental. Christian steps out, dressed in a suit.
Any word from him?
He asks as he approaches. He leans in to kiss Kimberly on her cheek, a gesture of habit, I suppose, but she pulls away before his lips can touch her skin.
I'm sorry,
I hear him whisper to her. She shakes her head and turns her attention to me. My heart aches for her. She doesn't deserve such a betrayal. I guess that's the thing about betrayal, though. It holds no prejudice and preys on those who neither see it coming nor deserve it. Tess is coming with and is going to watch out for Harden at the wedding, she begins to explain. Then she meets Christian's eyes, so that while we're all inside, she can make sure nothing else interrupts this precious day. The venom in her tone is clear, but she remains calm. Christian shakes his head at his fiancé.
We aren't going to that damn wedding. Not after all this shit.
Why not? Kimberly asks with dead eyes.
Because this.
Vance gestures back and forth between the two of us.
And because both of my sons are more important than any wedding, especially this one. I don't expect you to sit there with a smile in the same room as her.
Kimberly looks surprised, but at least partially placated by his words. I watch and keep quiet. Christian's referral to Harden and Smith as his sons for the first time has rattled me. There are so many things I could say to this man, so many hateful words I desperately want to sling at him, but I know I shouldn't. It won't help anything, and my focus needs to stay on figuring out Harden's whereabouts and how he is handling the news. People will talk, especially Sasha. Kimberly scowls.
I don't give a shit about Sasha or Max or anyone. Let them talk. We live in Seattle, not Hampstead.
He reaches for her hands, and she lets him gather them between his.
Fixing my mistakes is the only priority I have right now,
he says, his voice shaky. The cold anger I feel toward him begins to melt, but only slightly.
You shouldn't have let Harden out of the car,
Kimberly says, her hands still in Christian's.
I couldn't exactly stop him. You know Harden. And then my seatbelt got stuck and I couldn't tell where he went. God damn it,
he says, and Kimberly softly nods in agreement. I finally sense it's time for me to speak. Where do you think he went? If he doesn't show up at the wedding, where should I look?
Well, I just checked both bars I know that are open this early,
Vance says with a frown.
Just in case.
His expression softens when he looks at me.
I know now I shouldn't have separated him from you while I told him. It was a huge mistake, and I know that you're what he needs right now.
Unable to think of anything remotely polite to say to Vance, I give him a simple nod and pull my phone from my pocket to try Harden yet again. I know his phone won't be on, but I have to try. While I call, Kimberly and Christian look at each other silently, hand in hand, each searching the other's eyes for some sign. When I hang up, he looks at me and says,
"The wedding is starting in 20 minutes. I can drive you there now if you want."
Kimberly holds up a hand. I can drive her. You take Smith and go back to the hotel.
But,
he begins to argue, but given the look on her face, he wisely chooses not to continue.
You'll come back to the hotel, won't you?
He asks, his eyes filled with fear. Yes, she sighs.
I'm not going to leave the country.
Relief replaces Christian's panic, and he lets go of Kimberly's hands.
Be careful, and call me if you need anything. You know the address of the church, right?
Yes. Give me your keys. She holds out one hand. Smith's fallen asleep, and I don't want to wake him. I silently applaud her strong demeanor. I would be a mess if I were her. I am a mess now, on the inside. Less than 10 minutes later, Kimberly drops me off in front of a small church. Most of the guests have already gone inside, leaving only a few stragglers on the outside steps. I take a seat on a bench and watch the streets for any sign of Harden. From where I'm sitting, I can hear the wedding march start up inside the church and picture Trish in her wedding gown walking down the aisle to meet her groom. She's smiling and bright and beautiful. But the Trish in my mind doesn't coincide with the mother who lies about the father of her only son. The steps empty, and the last few guests go inside to watch Trish and Mike wed. Minutes tick by, and I can hear nearly every sound coming from inside the small building. A half hour later, the guests cheer as the bride and groom are pronounced husband and wife, which I take as my cue to leave. I don't know where I'll go, but I can't just sit here and wait. Trish will be exiting the church soon, and the last thing I need is an awkward run-in with the new bride. I begin walking back the way we arrived. At least, I think. I don't remember exactly, but it's not like I have anywhere to go. I pull out my phone again and redial Harden, but his phone is still off. My battery is less than half full, but I don't want to power it off in case Harden tries to call. As I continue my search, aimlessly walking the neighborhood and looking inside at restaurant bars here and there, the sun begins to set in the London sky. I should have asked Kimberly to borrow one of their rentals, but I wasn't thinking clearly at the time, and she has other things to worry about right now. Harden's rental is still parked at Gabriel's, but I don't have a spare key. The beauty and grace of Hampstead diminishes with each step I take into the other side of town. My feet are aching, and the spring air is growing colder as the sun sets. I shouldn't have worn this dress or these stupid shoes. If I had known how today was going to turn out, I would have worn workout clothes and sneakers to make it easier to chase Harden down. In the future, if I ever leave town with him again, that will be my standard uniform. After some time, I can't tell if my mind is playing tricks on me or if the street I've wandered onto is actually familiar. It's lined with small houses, much like Trish's, but I had been drifting in and out of sleep when Harden drove us into town, and I don't trust my mind right now. I'm thankful that the streets are mostly empty, and all the residents seem to be inside for the night. Otherwise, sharing the streets with the people leaving the bars would make me even more paranoid. I nearly burst into tears of relief when I see Trish's house a little ways off. It's grown dark, but the street lamps are on, and as I get closer, I'm increasingly positive it's her house. I don't know if Harden will be there, but I pray that if he isn't, the door will at least be unlocked so I can sit down and have some water. I've been walking aimlessly around block after block for hours. I'm lucky that I ended up on the only street in this village that could be of any use to me. As I near Trish's house, A tattered glowing sign in the shape of a beer distracts me. The small bar is set in between a house and an alley. A chill runs through me. It must have been hard for Trish to stay in the same house, so close to the bar her assailants came from to find Ken. Harden told me once that she simply couldn't afford to move. The way he shrugged it off surprised me, but sadly, money is vicious that way. This is where he is. I know it. I go up to the little place, and when I pull open the iron door, I'm immediately embarrassed by my attire. I look like a complete madwoman walking into this type of bar in a dress and barefoot, my shoes in my hands. I gave up on wearing them an hour ago. I drop my heels onto the floor and slide my feet back into them, wincing at the pain of the straps rubbing against the raw patches of skin on my ankles. The bar isn't crowded, and it doesn't take me long to scan the room and find Harden, sitting at the bar with a glass raised to his mouth. My heart plummets to the floor. I knew I would find him this way, but my faith in him is taking a beating right now. I had hoped, with everything in me, that he wouldn't resort to drinking his pain away. I take a deep breath before approaching him. Harden. I tap his shoulder. He swivels the barstool around to face me, and my stomach turns at the sight in front of me. His eyes are bloodshot, deep, red lines, mapping across them so fiercely that the white has nearly disappeared. His cheeks are flushed, and the smell of liquor is so heavy that I can taste it. My palms begin to sweat, and my mouth goes dry.
"Look who it is,"
he slurs. The glass in his hand is nearly empty, and I cringe at the sight of the three empty shot glasses on the bar before him.
"How'd you find me, anyway?"
He tilts his head back and gulps down the rest of the brown liquor before calling to the man behind the bar.
"Another."
I move my face so that it's directly in front of Harden's, so he can't look away. "Baby, are you okay?" I know that he isn't, but don't know how I should handle him until I can gauge his mood and how much alcohol he's consumed.
"Baby,"
he says mysteriously, like he's thinking about something else as he talks. But then he snaps to and gives me a killer smile.
"Yeah, yeah, I'm fine. Have a seat. Want a drink? Have a drink. Barkeep, another."
The bartender looks at me, and I shake my head no. Not noticing, Harden pulls out the stool next to him and pats the seat. I glance around the small bar before climbing up onto the stool.
"So how'd you find me?"
he asks again. I'm confused and put on edge by his behavior. He's clearly drunk, but that's not what is bothering me. It's the eerie calm behind his voice. I've heard it before, and it never brings with it good things. "I've been walking around for hours, and I recognized your mom's house across the street, so I knew, well, I knew I should look here." I shiver at the reminder of Harden's stories of Ken spending night after night at this exact bar.
"My little detective,"
Harden softly says, while raising a hand to tuck my hair behind my ear. I don't flinch or pull away, despite the growing anxiety bubbling inside me. "Will you come with me? I want us to go back to that hotel for the night, and then we can leave in the morning." Right then, the bartender brings him his drink, and Harden gives it a serious look.
"Not yet."
"Please, Harden." I meet his bloodshot eyes. "I'm so tired, and I know you are too." I try to use my weakness against him without bringing up Christian or Ken. I lean closer to him. "My feet are killing me, and I've missed you. Christian tried to find you and couldn't. I've been walking for a while, and I really want to go back to the hotel. Together." I know him well enough to be certain that if I start rambling about anything too heavy, he'll lose it and this calmness will evaporate in seconds.
"He didn't look that hard. I started drinking."
Harden holds up his glass.
"At the bar right across from where he left me."
I lean into him, and he begins talking again before I can come up with anything to say.
"Have a drink. My friend is here. She'll buy you a shot."
He waves a hand at the glasses on the bar.
"We ran into each other at that other fine establishment, but then it seemed like an evening from the past, and I decided to bring us here, for old time's sake."
My stomach drops. "Friend?"
"An old friend of the family."
He nods toward a woman emerging from the bathroom. She appears to be in her late 30s, early 40s, and has bleached blonde hair. I'm relieved that she isn't a young woman, since it appears that Harden has been drinking with her for a while now. I really think we should go, I press, and reach for his hand. He jerks away.
Judith, this is Teresa.
Judy, she corrects him, at the same time that I say, Tessa. Nice to meet you. I force a smile and turn back to Harden. Please, I beg again.
Judy knew that my mom was a whore,
Harden says, and the smell of whiskey bombards my senses again. I didn't say that, the woman laughs. She's dressed too young for her age. Her top is low cut and her flared jeans are too tight.
She did say that. My mom hates Judy.
Harden smiles. The strange woman returns his smile. Wonder why. I begin to feel as if I'm on the outside of a private joke between them. Why? I ask without thinking. Harden gives her a warning glare and waves his hand, dismissing my question. It takes everything in me not to knock him from the bar stool. If I weren't aware that he's only trying to mask his pain, I would do just that. Long story, doll. The woman waves for the bartender. Anyway, you look like you could use some tequila. No, I'm okay. The last thing I want is a drink.
Lighten up, baby.
Harden leans closer to me.
You aren't the one who just found out his entire life is a fucking lie, so lighten up and have a drink with me.
My heart aches for him, but drinking isn't the answer. I need to get him out of here. Now. Do you prefer...